All right. Hey, everybody. Welcome back to Everything is a Spring. Derek, how are you doing today, buddy?
Hey, Jim. Hey, it's been a long day, as you know, but we're here. It's podcasting time. It's that time of the week. I'm feeling good. How are you, buddy?
Absolutely. Oh, I'm doing great. I have been looking forward to this again all week. I feel like I sounded like a broken record, but it's just so much fun.
No, it's something. Like, I'm not used to having a project that I'm, like, genuinely looking forward to, like... Yeah, it's a few hours to edit this bad boy, but I look forward to every part of the process. I don't know. It's cool.
No, I think it's so much fun. And like, I've got a lot of projects, right? I mean, you know that. But
oh, yeah.
It's really fun to have a project that I'm doing collaboratively.
Like, you don't have to pull all the weight yourself.
Yeah. I mean, and honestly, like, I think that you do way more on this than I do.
It's interesting you say that because I think the same thing. I'm like, oh, Jim's like making the script. He's doing the hosting. And I'm like, all I do is edit. But oh, I don't man, know. I it's just, a good combo. I think we kind of like got it dialed in too.
I think we're doing pretty good. I'd love to hear like an unbiased third party, but we don't have one of those yet. So,
hey, you know, you'd be surprised. Jim, I have something to talk about today.
What you got?
We have two milestones for Everything's a Spring that we hit this week.
Okay, what do we got?
So as of this episode, by the time it comes out, that will be 1 month of Everything's a Spring. So they say it takes a month to make a habit. How does it feel, man? Do we actually do anything?
Oh, man. I think it's been great. I remember talking, I was talking with Rocky, one of my coworkers, and this morning she came in to make up some time from previous in the week. But anyway... and you know, I told her we were recording today and she's like, oh, y'all are still doing that. And she was so excited. And, I think she really likes podcasts and it was just great. And, I was like, yeah, we're still doing it. It's going to be great. So, I think we've got a great thing going here and I've been really enjoying it. And I think people around us do as well.
Yeah. So I know that most of our feedback's been friends and stuff, which is, it's really humbling to like have them. Use an hour of their time listening to us.
It makes my heart happy. It does. And I think part of this too is like, it really gets back to like why we started doing this, right? Which is really to kind of hang out and connect with each other and you know, kind of to project a little bit of that positive energy back into the ecosystem, as it were.
Yeah, it carries me through the week. Like when I had a bad week at work this week, as I told you, right? But like I knew at least at the end of the week, one, Friday's around the corner, and then I get to do a podcast with Jim. And if you think about it, this is the biggest frequency like we've talked to each other in our adult lives, you know, like with all the new responsibilities. It gives us an excuse to just hang.
Yeah, man. And I think that's so crazy to me. Is like we because like we spent, you know, like literally every summer together for
7 years, like, give or take.
Yeah. Well, yeah, I guess five, right? Cause you were doing it a little bit longer than I was, but yeah, like after that, you know, we were going to different colleges and even though you were in Macon, which is only 2 hours away, I mean, we saw each other
maybe once a year.
A couple times a year maybe. And then, you know, now that we're real, real adults, it's been even more difficult. So I guess the ability to, I feel very blessed to have like the ability to make a project that gives me an excuse to hang out with my friends.
Right. It doesn't feel like work. I don't know. It's great.
I think it's great. I think everybody should do this.
Yeah. For real. And we have one more milestone, right? So 1 month of Everything's a Spring and we got our first, according to the Spotify analytics, our first international listener.
Ayo, yeah, so we were talking about this earlier, New Zealand, huh?
Right, how do you even find us? Hey, our one friend from New Zealand that's listening to this podcast for some reason, what are you doing, man? What are you doing out here?
Yeah, thanks so much. And you know, reach out to us or comment or something. Tell us how you found us, why you're listening to us, and what you enjoy about the show. We'd love to hear about it.
Yeah, and I did the survey. Only a few people answered, but it seemed like a resounding people want the hour. They didn't like
the country. They want the hour.
Yeah, so like we have something to talk about for an hour. Yeah, we'll go ahead and get it done.
Absolutely. Okay. Well, they want more Jim and Derek. Hey, I understand that.
And I don't know if you saw, I changed our like quote unquote company name to Jim and Derek Presents, so it doesn't just say Everything's a Spring twice.
Fantastic. I think that's great. Jim and Derek Presents. Wow, we could really make a go of that.
Who knows what else we'll make over time, right? Because like the people don't know. We've done started projects in the past, like collaborative projects, but we never stuck with it. This is the one we've actually, you know, put some weight behind.
Well, I think the challenge behind, because I think what you're referring to is basically Wandersmith, right?
Yeah.
And the challenge there is really like, so it was video.
Oh, yeah.
And that rarely requires us to be in the same place.
Mm-hmm.
And it was a lot more work.
Oh, yeah. We only got the pilot out. And don't get me wrong, it was the same, like, I don't know if you remember how we ended that one video we made, but it was kind of like,
it was good.
Showing our friendship kind of past what the production was, just us goofing off in the parking lot.
But, absolutely. And like, that was the whole point, right?
Yeah.
And I think it was so much fun and I really enjoyed that. I think that the video actually holds up like pretty well.
Oh, yeah. Hopefully some nerdy film student who's on a budget will actually get some value, you know?
Yeah. And I'd actually, I would, if the universe aligns, if the stars align up again, I would love to keep working on stuff like that with you. It was just so much fun.
Oh, yeah. I have a feeling, but I don't know. I got a good feeling we're going to have a lot of projects past this podcast, you know?
I certainly hope so. I mean, yeah, I think that would be great. I think, you know, we've talked a long time about the two of us together make one very strong man.
Oh, yeah. Together we are one, maybe 1.5 strong men.
That's true. I think really, like, we could do some really incredible things working together. So I would be 100% down for that. I think that'd be spectacular.
Sweet. And just easy to work with too. Cause like, you're smart, you bring something to the table and it's just fun. I don't know. Like I hope that we can get some more of our friends, like maybe as guests we talked about.
Yes. That'd be great. I know. Like, I think Kelly would be an easy one cause he's up in Atlanta near you. So you know,
yeah, we could easily, hey, he's got equipment, you know,
he's got some stuff. Kasha would be a great one. She's a little bit further away, but I think we could still work that out.
Oh, yeah. Matt for some civil engineering stuff. That'd be pretty slick.
I mean, here's the other thing, too, Derek. Between the two of us, a Pelican case and $300.
That ain't much.
That ain't that bad. I already got a Pelican case.
I already got $300. We could use
it. You know, so we could. So I don't know if we talked about this on air, but, you know, like, Derek was telling me, like, some of these podcasts that feature guest hosts, what they do is they basically just put the setup in a box and they just ship it to whoever their guest is. And then they basically just say, hey, let's hop on the call. We'll tell you how to plug everything in, get everything set up, do the sound test, do the audio test. And then, you know, off once you're races. Done, you ship it back and we're good to go, you know? So I think that'd be really fun. We've kind of been doing this mini series. And so we might be able to do it in a similar way with one of our other guests where, you know, if we got Kasha on, we're talking about aerospace or satellites because she works with satellite pathing and stuff like that.
Yeah.
You know, what disasters are there in space? Oh, you know, like what's, I'm sure there's some fantastic engineering disasters that occur in space. That's really kind of her area of nerd.
Right.
And so to get her on board would be great. So we just ship that out to her. She holds on to the setup for like a month. We do our little mini series and then she ships it back. And, you know, that takes maybe a week or so. And that way we're not like really pressed on, oh, we got to get this thing back and then ship it back out to the next person.
Right. And you know, who knows?
So that might be like, kind of nice.
I have no idea what this podcast looks like at episode 100. You know, like things have changed significantly since we started. And that's only been four weeks.
Oh my gosh.
You know?
Well, you think about that too, like episode 100, that's like 2 years out.
Yeah.
You know, like that's crazy. Oh man.
It's going to be funny to cut cool, back though. To this moment.
Oh my gosh. Yeah. I'm so excited. I really, I'm just so excited about this whole project. It's been so much fun. And I think there's so much more that we can do with it. And it's just like a great creative outlet to me. It's just I get to storytell.
Exactly.
You know, for like 30, 45 minutes.
You know, stretch your creative muscle and speak of the devil, you know, just so we get to our hour mark. Let's go ahead and get started, huh?
Fair enough. That's enough preload for this episode. Derek, I've got a question for you.
Oh, I got an answer, Jim.
Are you a margarine man or can you believe it's not butter?
Hmm. So in my personal life, right? I'll be honest. I'm a Southern boy. I love butter as it is, but I do cook for my granddad a lot and, you know, got to keep him heart healthy. So we're country crock margarine people.
Okay. So so if you had your druthers, you'd be a butter man.
Oh, yeah. Slap some butter in the pan. You know, I would like to cook my eggs in the bacon fat kind of guy.
Oh yeah, it's like, oh, we're gonna get in another tangent, but I would love to try, because you know McDonald's used to like fry their French fries in like lard.
Oh, yeah.
Right, and like that's why they were so good. I really want to try that, and they basically stopped because it, you know,
these something heart
about
attacks.
Cholesterol and yeah, something about health and safety and food. And,
you know, making it edible.
Yeah, the 70s, 80s, where the people started to get concerned about what are we doing to our bodies. You know, this is why I drive a truck from the 60s.
Oh, man.
Back when we died like men.
Oh,
but anyway, so Derek, you're a margarine man now. But what would you do with, oh, I don't know, maybe 330 million pounds of butter?
Oh, wow. Call me butter. I'm on a roll. That's a lot of butter, Jim.
It's a lot of butter.
It's a lot of butter. So, I don't even know how. You said pounds?
Yeah. So that's, 330 million pounds of, well, to be fair, dairy products. Not just
butter. Not just butter, but
a lot of that is butter. A lot of that is butter and cheese.
Oh, man. Okay. Well, you add the cheese to it.
Oh, yeah, like some good queso. I'm a huge queso guy.
Oh, man, I'd probably get in trouble with, like, the country of Italy. I'd try to, like, make some Parmesan knockoff to, like, saturate the market.
Saturate the market. Outstanding. Oh, man. Yeah, like, I feel like whenever I go to, a Mexican restaurant or whatever and I get the queso, like, there's not quite enough, like,
you want
hot,
more
runny
to it?
I want a little bit more. Yeah, like if you order like the small bowl of queso,
right,
like it's not enough queso. It's
never
enough.
It's never enough.
But then if you get like the bigger bowl of like the one size up, it's like way too much queso.
Okay, so you gotta find that comfortable in between.
You gotta find that comfortable in between. And Derek, today's topic, they ordered way too much queso.
All right,
is what happened, and we're talking about the Wisconsin butter fire.
Oh my goodness! I love the name Wisconsin butter fire.
The Wisconsin butter fire of 1991.
Oh, we're like in the future! Holy cow!
Yeah. So we are jumping. We've done kind of a couple different episodes now. We've done an episode from 1814. Then we jumped up to 1875, 1914, and now we're jumping all the way up to
91.
What's
that? The Soviet Union collapsed.
Oh my gosh.
The internet's like not a thing yet, but like personal computers are super hype.
Very infancy of the internet. Yeah. I mean, this is.
You've got
Nirvana.
Mail.
Like Nirvana's around. Like.
Oh, the Talking Heads are still together.
Yeah. It's like grunge rock and everybody hates the government. It's great.
take me back.
I know, right? Oh my gosh. Back when our biggest problem was. You know, Richard Nixon or whatever. Anyway, before we get too political, let's go back to this butter fire.
Oh, God.
So let me set the stage for you. So during the 1980s and really even back into the 70s, one of the things that was happening is that the government was heavily subsidizing dairy farmers. And basically they did this for a couple different reasons, but what it resulted in was the enormous stockpiling of cheese and butter and like these types of products that like they're dairy products that are relatively relatively stable. So you can kind of hold on to them.
I think right? I've heard loosely about this era where it's like,
yes.
We had the same way we store nukes. We were storing butter and cheese at a federal level.
Yeah, so I think it's called the U.S. I'm going to look it up real quick.
The U.S. Department of Butter.
It's like the Butter Reserves.
The Butter Reserve sounds like the worst army ever.
So, the USDA has kept cheese and other dairy products in cold storage. It's all in Missouri, apparently.
What?
So basically the idea is that milk is a very foundational part of our food supply. The problem is that because milk is such a very perishable item, the pricing of it is like pretty volatile. And so and because it's a very seasonal thing, right? Because basically when cows, you know, cows have to have kids in order to produce milk. And so during the calving season, they produce lots of milk, and then naturally they drop off over the course of the year once they no longer have to feed their young. And so the government was looking for ways to kind of help stabilize this market and give it a little bit more just market stability, keep prices low, keep it affordable, help economically. And because they, again, milk has a relatively short shelf life, they turned cheese, right? Because cheese has a pretty long shelf life. You can store it fairly easily.
Right. It's like the next Pokemon evolution of, like, you evolve into Buttermon, then you go to Cheesymon, and then after that.
Exactly.
You know, you're getting to that Gen 6 stuff.
You get to the mega evolution with the three cheese burrito. but anyway. Yeah, so in 1949, the USDA starts to help subsidize the dairy farmers. And what ends up happening is you have these enormous quantities of cheese that are built up. And there's a lot of really funny stuff with this, where basically the government is just trying to give this cheese away.
Like, they got too much.
Get rid of it. They can't get rid of it fast enough. Like, they're shipping millions of pounds of cheese overseas as like federal aid to foreign aid and stuff like this.
Wait, we're using this like as a diplomatic tool? It's like every ambassador, yes, take your cheese, yes, with you.
Yeah, I mean, like, when you, so this is another interesting tangent, right? It's like, so when we talk about like foreign aid to these different countries like Ukraine and stuff like this, and we're talking about like, oh, you know, we're spending $55 billion in aid to Ukraine. We're not actually just giving Ukraine like $55 billion.
No, like, there's a lot of logistical support. There's a lot of, yes, hey, build the thing so we have a backlog ourselves.
It's logistics. It's training. It's medical equipment. I mean, there's so much that goes into it. It's humanitarian relief. And obviously, like, this is a very specific situation in Ukraine, right? But in general, like, the U.S. still gives like an enormous, like, you know, billions and billions of dollars in financial, in foreign aid to different countries around the world. And honestly, a lot of that is actually in surplus, like, agricultural products, like corn and cheese and, like, wheat, you know, this kind of stuff.
Like that.
And wheat, yeah, and basic flour, yeah, gas. Like, not mostly gas. We're like, we love oil.
No, we're keeping
we
that.
Love oil too much. We got to keep that for us. But yeah, like corn and cheese and like all these surplus products. So it's really products that would go to the waste if they were not, you know, shipped out elsewhere. So it's a little bit of more of a nuanced topic than we're not just giving these countries billions of dollars.
Right. And, you know, folks don't like to look at the numbers because all they see is the headline and it's just like, oh, shit, right, my fist in the air, angry. It's like, but think about what absolutely the government, right, pays for anyway. Like, we spend that on everything except education. Get over yourself.
Yeah, so anyway, but yeah, so we're building up this enormous stockpile of cheese, right?
So old to be alive in the 90s again.
Oh my gosh. And one of the places that they decide to store some of this cheese is in the Central Storage and Warehouse Company on Cottage Grove Road in Madison, Wisconsin.
Madison, Wisconsin.
And it's a 500... It's a 500,000 square foot complex.
Holy.
Storing between 10 and 15 million pounds of government surplus butter.
That's ridiculous. There's three parts of that sentence that don't make sense. Government surplus butter. You can stop there. we've done it. But the square
yep
footage of that facility is like area 51. If you're lactose intolerant, is
huge.
That torture to just have to walk through that bad boy?
Probably, yeah. I mean, so there's other things in this building as well, right? So there's also Ocean Spray cranberries for making cranberry juice.
That's good for you.
apparently, there are millions and millions of hot dogs.
What?
Yeah, so Oscar Mayer stored at one point about 4 million pounds of sausage in the facility. And there's also like other types of products. There's like bakery products and hams and like, there's also, There's also about 1,000 pounds of anhydrous ammonia. Derek,
one of these things is not like the other.
Yes. So they also are storing ammonia. Derek, you want to tell us a little bit about ammonia?
Well, like, see, off the top of my head, I'm thinking, what, it's like NH3 or something? Ammonia,
yep,
a famous cleaning product, is known to be very volatile. But, you know, we use it for, diluted, of course, we use it for, like, basic household cleaning. I guess I don't really know too much about the, like, industrial uses of ammonia. I know we use it in, like, low-grade chemistry for, like, learning how to, like, do, you know, electrophoresis and stuff like that, but I'm not quite sure. I don't have much knowledge on ammonia as a, why you would store it anhydrously. Is this just dried? Like, just add some water ammonia?
Yeah, I suppose, yeah, I guess it would be, right? So it's, like, concentrated, right? So there's a couple different, like, industrial uses for it. It's used as a solvent. It's very widely used. Basically, you can dissolve alkali metals into it. You can also dissolve different salts into it, which is useful in various different products. It's used as fertilizer, ammonia is used in fertilizers. There's also, again, using for cleaning. It's also used as an antimicrobial agent for food products, which is probably where it was used here.
Oh, you know what? You make a lot of sense. Ammonium nitrate would probably be like you're making fertilizer. It makes sense to store it with the, you know, if you ever ran out of like fertile land, that would be a way to jumpstart your agriculture again, say you were attacked. But this sounds like, it does sound like post-Cold War thinking, we got to have a vault of all this stuff just in case, you know? That's what it feels like.
So, I think what they were probably using it for here is as an antimicrobial agent in food. So I'm looking at the Wikipedia page for ammonia.
Thank you, Wikipedia, for sponsoring this, sponsoring my education for years, man. Forget what
honestly,
your teacher said.
Yeah, I always found that like really weird. It's like, oh, don't use Wikipedia as a source. And I could get it, like, because it's kind of a community sourced, like anybody can technically go in and edit things.
Yeah, and if anyone's gonna get on us for using Wikipedia as a source, just go to the references of the page.
Exactly.
And you got 18 books that they're referencing. Like, come on.
Yeah,
man.
Like they list the references down in the bottom. And so if I want to go into more detail, I'll pull into that. And I do that quite a bit, actually.
Yeah. This my like, biology degree brought to you in part by Wikipedia. I mean, it's free. It's free
exactly.
knowledge.
It's free
I donate
knowledge.
To them once a year because I think it's something we got to keep up.
Absolutely. It's free real estate.
It's free real estate.
It's like, honestly, like part of what it is just like, this is what the internet was meant to be, right?
Yes.
Like the internet was meant to
knowledge
be like this
base.
this free access of information.
Yes. Remember what Amazon started as? A freaking online bookstore.
Bookstore. Yep.
How far we've fallen.
Oh, geez. Every day we stray further from God's light.
It's getting dark.
So, the ammonia is used basically to kill like E. coli, which would probably be useful in a storage facility for hot dogs and hams and stuff like this.
So is this the 90s. Is this like a refrigerated facility or is it just like cold storage?
Yes.
Okay, cool.
Yes.
Cool.
So there's probably like different sections of the facility, but yeah. So they've got refrigerated sections of the facility and probably have like cool, quote unquote, cool sections of the facility. You know, because like cheese doesn't actually have to, like depending on
right,
the
right, you care
of
more about humidity, I guess, than cool.
Yes. And kind of to be kept cool and dry, but it doesn't necessarily have to be below 41 degrees Fahrenheit. Anyway, but the point is there's like a lot of different stuff and the ammonia is key because ammonia is basically like flammable, I think. It's used also in fuel, so it is volatile, right? So we got to be careful about this, right?
Like if you think
about hydrogen, nitrogen, break
ammonia by itself ain't too bad, but like you think about ammonium nitrate and fertilizer, it's like what's used to make bombs, so you know.
Yes,
it's very what do you call it, electroreactive. It's very electronegative, those nitrogen those nitrogen groups.
Yes, so it's important to keep in mind that the ammonia is a potential explosion hazard effectively in this particular instance. So obviously, we've already said this is the Wisconsin butter fire. So basically what happens is on May 3rd, 1991, the fire starts somewhere in this storage facility. Later, they find out that it was probably caused by an electric forklift. The batteries shorted out, and that's what started the fire.
Oh.
So
forklift certification can't solve that.
Yeah, forklift privileges are revoked. No more forklift for you. And what ends up happening is because this starts in the butter section, right? And you basically have, it probably would have been like lead acid batteries. But anyway, so you've got like the fire started in this forklift. Well, that catches the, you know, butter is basically just fat, right? It's just fat and oil.
So right? It's flammable?
It's very flammable. Butter is actually very flammable, right?
I did not know that.
It is. And like so many foods are actually very flammable. Like, have you ever let a Dorito on fire?
Yeah. You did. Wasn't that a thing they taught us back in the Scouts? Like you could use Fritos or Doritos to like set a fire?
Like, potato chips, very flammable, right? Because it's basically like a cornstarch. Like basically, right? It's like a corn chip, right? Or a potato chip. And it's fried. It's literally like impregnated with oil. And so like it'll just burn, right? And it like black smoke and everything. It's kind of crazy. Anybody who hasn't seen a Dorito on fire, I highly recommend it. It's a lot of fun. But also kind of terrifying. I'm like, "Oh, we're eating these." it's a lot of oil. Yeah, so butter is also very flammable and a lot of these and cheese as well, right? So because it's all just basically fat. And so what happens is the building owner, Ken Williams, he basically says the fire spreads so quickly and so fast because of this huge quantity of fuel that was just immediately accessible. The sprinkler systems didn't even have time to like work. Like they didn't work. They didn't turn on fast enough to like contain it.
Oh.
And so the building goes up very, very quickly. And there's 25 employees in the building. Thankfully, everybody managed to get out in time. Nobody is killed during this entire incident. So right away, huge win.
Good to have a good fire evac plan. Looks like they nailed it.
They nailed it. So the big thing, right? So the firefighters are like coming in, right? Because they're called into the fire, obviously. And one of the things one of the firefighters says is he's like, you know, you can kind of tell like what you're going into by how far away you can see it.
Right? Oh, okay. So like as you're driving up, you know,
You're in the truck. Yeah. As you're in the truck, like you're kind of looking at the horizon to see like, okay, can we see where the fire is? Can we see the smoke? So there's flames going like 300 feet into the air. Right. And like the belching black smoke from the building, like they can see it. They're like, we're in for it. Like, this is going to be a big one. And when they get there, like, again, like, part of the thing with these, we talked last week about the Dublin whiskey fire, right? And, like, even though you have the alcohol is on fire, right? But there's enough of it that it's flowing out into the streets. So, too, with butter, as it turns out.
Really?
So yes, the butter is on fire. The cheese is melting. The cheese is on fire. And what's happening is the butter and cheese that is not on fire is melting, coalescing, and then flooding out of the building.
So there's like a secret point during this event where there was a perfect queso mixture, but no one was there to enjoy it.
Yeah, and not any chips anyway either. Mm-hmm. There's no chips. There's just an enormous quantity of queso just flooding out of this burning building.
Shame.
And there's just hams and hot dogs floating in it and just rolling down. And so the firefighters get there and the initial engines, like they're having trouble getting in because like all around the low-lying area of the plant, there's like pools of butter that are like 5 feet deep in places.
That's a lot.
Yeah. Just like liquid butter.
So they're like wading all through butter spots. To get to the spot.
Yes, like I wish our listeners could see the pictures of it. Like there's this one picture where there's literally a firefighter wading through like almost waist deep butter, right?
Holy
to get to the thing. There's another where there's a pumping truck that they're trying to get the fire out. They're trying to control the fire. And like, it's up to the bumpers in butter.
What the heck?
And there's just, all these hoses are like getting, you know, they got to get the hose waters, you know, gonna get around. They're having to get the hoses. And as they're fighting the fire, like more and more butter is coming out of the building. And so basically there ends up this moat around the building. And because so butter is actually, it's an oil basically. And the EPA basically stated that butter spills have a very similar effect on the ecosystem to like oil. Like right. Oil spills.
Because right? You're going to have to, if I'm not mistaken, you can't just throw water at it to dilute it. You're going to need something equally oil-based to dissolve it, right?
Yeah. And when you have, you know, like all this oily fats and stuff getting into like a water system, for example, like there's
everything's clogged.
Right? Everything's clogged. It kills like all the wildlife. And it's really expensive and really hard to recover an ecosystem from that. And so basically, like, what they had to do to contain all this butter that's coming out of the building is that they have to, like, dig trenches and create dams around the building to try to contain all the butter.
Boys, we must divert the butter.
They do. And they end up, like, digging a trench to, like, a nearby retaining pond where they just funnel all this butter. And then that starts to fill up with butter, so they have to pump across the railroad tracks into another retaining pond. And
you
then
have to sacrifice this retaining pond for the greater good.
Yeah, and then they're like, okay, so then they figure out like, okay, we can pump into the sanitary sewer system to help divert more of this butter. So now they're pumping, there's like 18 pumps like diverting butter from this pond into the sewer system. So where it can be like, you know, captured and processed by the sewer system, like the municipal sewage water reclamation plant and all that, right?
The maintenance on that plant was never the same after that day.
Oh my God. Like, we're going to get to that. but yeah. And so basically there's all this butter happening and, it creates this moat where basically the refueling tankers can't get to the water tank, like to the pumping trucks. And the pumping trucks run on diesel, right? And the pumping trucks equally cannot get out. nobody expected that these fire trucks would have to wade through 5 feet of butter, and so they can't go through it.
Who can expect that?
I don't know, right? And like, so The firefighters, like a lot of the comments from the firefighters are like, nobody's ever seen this before. Mm. Like, you know, even the old timers, like we've never had to deal with a butter fire before.
Holy.
And yeah. And so it's like this thing where it's like, nobody has dealt with this before. So it's all just seat of the pants. How do we fix this in the moment? And basically what they end up having to do is there's like a line of firefighters carrying 5 gallon buckets of diesel to and from, like, across the moat of butter to get fuel to these trucks. And one of the comments from this guy, there's this guy named Davis, Fire Chief Stephen Davis, who started in 1989. So he's pretty new on the force at this point. And he says, I had butter in places a guy shouldn't have butter by the end of the night.
Oh, gosh.
Can you imagine?
I can't imagine. Like, I was like, oh, you know, you got butter in your boots. I didn't think about that.
No,
you'd
it's
never
everywhere.
Get clean. Like,
no.
I would be like bad. The duck on the Don dish show, just like hoping
yeah,
that
like,
one day I can be clean.
Please, somebody help. Like, yeah. And oh my God.
We just fly in one massive piece of toast.
Yeah. And like, this is like a multi-day event, right? Like, so these guys are literally like wading through butter for like a week.
Oh. Like, firefighters, we've said it before, they do not get the credit deserve.
Oh, I should have gotten. So my buddy Joe, Joe McManaman, I think you've met
McManaman.
Him.
McManaman,
he's a firefighter. So I would love to get his input on this. I wish I'd remembered to reach out to him. But yeah, I mean, so like, it's this whole thing and just, you know, thousands and thousands of tons of dairy just flooding out into the streets and into the retaining ponds and ditches and stuff. And, you know, by like May 6th, they had pumped 14 million gallons into the sanitary sewer system, right?
Holy
like, so the
crap. There's, you know, there's just a lot of butter in this facility to start with. I didn't think about it liquefied.
Yeah, like no, it's literally like a six. It's like a six-story building of butter. You know, it's like it's ridiculous.
Like you keep telling me about all these disasters, and it's always, of course, the disaster itself is interesting, but we got to look at like how many of these facilities exist that we just don't know about. Massive molasses tank, big old thing of whiskey and beer. Yeah, I can see that. Massive facility of butter. Come on, yeah, now.
Man. Well, it's kind of wild, right? Because we're thinking about, like, you don't think about the industrialization of the food industry, right? But, like, just to spit some numbers at you, like, the U.S. dairy, like, annual, like, consumption, right? So, basically, every American eats, like, 650 pounds of dairy a year.
That's a lot.
It's a lot of dairy. And there's 300 million Americans.
Americans eat like we have healthcare. Like, what the hell?
Hey, don't tell us that. We like our burgers. We like our cheeseburgers and we like our guns.
I can't talk trash. I had Taco Bell earlier today.
Yeah, I ate pizza. Yeah, I had pizza for lunch, you know, so it's just, oh, man. But anyway, so, yeah, it was like we had a lot of cheese. And, like, people don't think about, you know, all that cheese has to be stored somewhere. All that butter has to be stored somewhere. And the most cost-effective way to do it is to have these huge storage facilities. And that's exactly what CSW was and is. Actually, they're still in operation today. But yeah, I mean, it's just this enormous amount of dairy products, right? And it's about 8 days until the fire is fully out, right? So these firefighters are on site for like 8 days, you know, working on this thing. It actually ends up being Wisconsin's largest like fire effort or whatever, like fire response ever.
I can't imagine being the governor. Like, you have to call a state of emergency on a butter fire?
Yeah, because there's just butter spilling out of this freaking plant.
I bet, like, they thought about everything that could happen to that plant. That's the last thing you'd think about. Like, they have the fire suppression system. It failed, and it's just like, what do now?
It's not that it failed, right? Like, it was not large enough to cope with the fire. Like, that's the problem, right? It wasn't enough. And that was like, I'm sure, a whole nother issue as well. I couldn't find a lot of data on like what that side of it was like in terms of, you know, did they come back and say, okay, like we have to make this fire suppression system beefier. I wasn't able to find that data. I imagine that happened, but I wasn't able to find that. But yeah, I mean, just it's insane, right?
That's ridiculous. There was a point where like the hot dogs in that facility were perfectly cooked.
Absolutely, that's actually fair. Probably pretty good. Like they've been fried in butter, basically.
So, do you think this endeavor smelled good? Like people live in Madison, Wisconsin, or is it a smell terrible?
So they talk about this. They talk about this. So, you would imagine like a butter fire would like smell kind of like I guess like popcorn or something like that, where you kind of like the melted popcorn.
That'd be nice.
It does not, unfortunately, right? So you get a little bit of that. You get a little bit of that. But also, like, there's other stuff in this, you know, building that's burning, right? There's obviously the building itself, you know. And then there's also, like, cranberries and ham. There's actually a lot of meat products here as well. So you have basically, like, burning meat and, burning, like, cranberries and burning, like, whatever, you know. So it's apparently this really nasty smell.
Yeah, and it's rotting after you said 8 days to get it done. It's gonna start rotting pretty soon.
It's starting to spoil, it's starting to go bad. And apparently, even decades later, like if you're still in those areas where You know, they were like resting and staging and recovering. These firefighters can still like smell it, because it just permeates everywhere. Gosh. Right. Cause you got to think about it again. Like these guys are like wading through rivers of the stuff and they got to come back to the station and they like, they got to sleep.
You know, those guys like, didn't cook with butter for weeks. They were like, absolutely not. We're oil people now.
They were like, we don't want to look at butter. We don't want to look at ham.
Someone
we,
goes on a diet. They're like, nah.
We don't want to do this. Like, I'm going to eat vegetables for a little while. Like, yeah. Yeah, it's pretty, pretty bad. And then...
And from a biological perspective, I just think about all that fat added to the ecosystem. I wonder, does that have any long-term effects on, like, the fauna around there? Like,
so
what are plants absorbing out of that?
There was actually there's a huge effort to clean up and prevent the butter from getting into really the big concern was the water, like the waterways, right? There's Starkweather Creek is actually very close. And so, right. Like, so May 4th, 3 million gallons of melted butter had run off and been pumped into the sewer systems, but there's still a lot more butter coming out of the facility. So on May 5th, it also started to rain. And so like water, like there's water and the oil as you're mixing and, like oil is heavier, oil floats on water, right?
Right.
So the water is going down, the oil is coming up and it's threatening to like flood the dams. And so the DNR, yeah, exactly. Like, and so like the DNR is like rapidly constructing more dams to prevent it from getting into the creek and contaminating the water system. Because this would have been like a huge ecological disaster.
Yeah, if that dam overflowed, you're talking about a completely different game at that point.
And they had literally like just finished a huge like $1 million water system reclamation project with this water system, and so that would have been completely ruined by this if it had gotten into the ecosystem. But fortunately, they were able to contain it pretty well. And basically in 2 weeks after the fire breaks out, they are able to pretty much completely clean everything up.
Oh, nice. And, they actually got it done. That seems like an impossible task when you describe it the way you have, right?
Oh, my gosh. Yeah, so cleanup costs about $500,000.
That's honestly not that bad, all things considered.
Well, that's just a cleanup. Yeah, so that's not the total cost of everything. The costs largely are, covered by the company CSW. And then there's a grant from USDA, to help with the cleanup efforts.
That's good. And then, like, you told us to store this butter. Damn it. Help us.
Yeah. 15 million pounds of this butter were yours. God damn it. You better help clean up. And then, I thought this was kind of funny. A local, daycare had sent out $20 to help clean up, because the kids were concerned about the polar bear on the CSW sign, which they had named Grover. So they wanted to help in. I thought that was like super pure and
just
cute,
like
so.
Super troopers. I'm doing my part.
Yeah, it's just these little kids who are, you know, like, oh, we want to help. I think it's great. But yeah, so in the aftermath of this, like all the firefighter equipment had to be just thrown away.
Oh my god! Yeah, like how do you maintenance that kind of stuff? Think about your braking system. As you've driven it through, what, miles of knee-deep butter?
Yeah, like, they had to, like, well, I guess it's not going to be super bad on, like, the equipment, right? Because, like, it's not like the butter is corrosive. Like,
it's lubricant where you don't want lubricant, you know?
Oh, yeah, like, they got to clean out the brakes, that's true. But, like, it's like a rust barrier.
Yeah, you know, like, especially, look at it positively. Think about it. You're used to your fire suit, like, smelling like fire and, like, wood and all these things. Like, you've already seen a lot of your firefighter, and now this.
It's like butter and spoiling meat. I mean, oh, my God.
I think that would ruin your... If you went into, like, a... what do you call it? Where they tan meat or smoke meats and stuff. Would you be able to go there without getting flashbacks from this day?
Oh, my gosh. I don't know, man. I think, like... And like, imagine wearing your fire suit that was just in like all this butter and stuff into like another fire.
Oh my god! And it goes up
and it starts. I don't think it would like catch on fire necessarily, but like the heat starts like melt the butter.
Getting like all squishy inside of it.
Yeah, and you're getting like buttery again. Like,
I hope Madison was able to get the firefighters new equipment because they did a heroic thing that day. No firefighters hurt, right? We're still good.
Yeah,
no casualties. No injuries.
Still good. the whole thing, no casualties, wonderful. only some minor injuries reported, but
maybe some fish got fat, but that's about it.
So the ecological stuff, I guess, like they really were able to keep that damage very, very minimal. Basically no significant quantities of product were released into the ecosystem, which is great. So it's really like,
also shout out to the DNR, because like, these are things, like as a biologist, I worked for the DNR in Georgia, and the amount of biologists that are just out there every day doing work that you do not care about, but it's just so important to the greater ecosystem of our state is,
it's so critical.
Shout out to those guys too. The scientists that never got their credit and the ecologists that are getting laughed at for being ecologists. I see you.
So there's, so again, like we think that like this was a great example of kind of like everybody like coming together, and again, kind of like the Dublin Whiskey Fire, where the fire brigades are really on it and they're doing everything to make sure this doesn't spread, contain it.
The rare cases of municipalities like doing their due diligence. But you know what I think causes that, Jim? These folks live in Madison, right? These are folks that are probably local.
Like, yeah, exactly.
They're saving their own community.
This is their, this is their stuff. And so the mayor of Madison was, Wisconsin? Yeah, Madison, Wisconsin. At the time, Paul Soglin, he sends a letter of appreciation out to the district. And he says, "I was really proud of the cooperation between the district, the city of Madison, and private contractors to save Lake Monona from an environmental disaster." And there's just this huge effort to really like respond in a very timely manner to this potentially devastating accident that really prevented a lot of problems. And so fortunately there was no real loss of ecosystem. There was no real loss of life or people, but there, just the property. Like, so there's these two buildings that get destroyed, and that's $7.5 million in property damage and $70 million of contents. By the end of it, you know, again, $500,000 in cleanup. I mean, so it's this huge.
That's a lot of butter. You said $70 million in content. How much does butter cost in the 90s? Holy crap. I think I'm having a hard time visualizing this.
You got to think about it. I mean, because again, it's 330 million pounds of dairy products. Jeez.
And for our British listeners in the future, we're not talking about that moolah. This ain't quid.
No. This is literally like weight. You know, and so I think this is pretty cool. Like the Wisconsin Daily State Journal article was titled "The Buttercup Runneth Over."
You know, some journalist is sitting there at their little typewriter, just so proud of themselves.
Oh my God. It's a dream, right? It's just like you have this ridiculous, ridiculous accident. And it's like, what do we call this?
God,
you know, how can we quip this to get that?
That's pretty good. I mean, think about it. That's 32 years ago, give or take. And it's still funny.
And it's still great. Yeah, I mean, so absolutely wild. It's just a crazy thing. And I think we gotta link this back to springs somehow, Derek. And
how is butter a spring?
Well, I guess if you look at butter as like a fluid, right? You know, you could technically run a hydraulic system with butter.
Right. And I guess if you look at butter, like the fatty acid content and how fat structures work and how, you know, the reason butter feels the way it feels, there's a chemical component or like an atomic component. If you go look up the fats in your body, it looks the same as like a PVC lattice matrix, you know, like when you start looking at these carbohydrate groups, if you look like, go ahead and look it up. It's crazy. Like everything's a spring. Butter's a spring. But you know what's not a spring? That fire suppression system.
Not a spring. And I think that's actually like the key to it here. Like for our topic, it's like, you know, we're looking at this fire suppression system and like the cause, like it's stated, right? You know, so this whole thing begins basically with a forklift.
Yeah.
Right. And it's electric forklift, has a short, catches on fire, and the whole building basically, I mean, like, literally, you're talking about almost $80 million of damage.
Yeah, I forgot. This is one forklift?
Because one forklift caught fire.
Wow.
You know? And so, you know, you got to be thinking, like, okay, well, how did that happen, right? Like, how is that allowed to create this huge chain of events? And I think one of the things that we have to look at here, and I don't think that there was any, like, class action lawsuits taken against the company. All the damage was basically
contained, right?
Contained, yeah. All the damage, nobody was killed. No one was seriously injured. So there's not really like a civil lawsuit there. People were evacuated. So when they were concerned that the ammonia tanks were going to catch fire, they did evacuate some nearby people, but they didn't end up exploding or anything. So like no harm there, no harm, no foul.
That's just good due diligence though. You know, just in case, like if that dam's about to go, you'd get everyone downstream out of there. Just in
case. Them out. Oh, we should definitely talk about dam failures. There's been some phenomenal dam failures lately.
I can't wait.
But anyway, there's going to be, oh, I'm so excited. That's going to be our next, I think that's going to be our next mini series is dams.
Like when you have a show based in physics, you have endless content.
We really do. And I'm going to get off onto a tangent about the dams. But anyway, so, yeah, I mean, you really have to look at like this fire suppression system and say like, you know, why wasn't this up to snuff? You know, like, you know, and like, why have you not thought this through? Because like butter is basically oil. Oil is flammable. you know,
if
so
I
like,
had to guess, they were thinking like, you have, yes, oil is flammable, but you're in the most there. I would have never thought about a forklift being a fire starter, right? I'm sure this isn't like a wood building. It's probably made of, you know, concrete and like steel.
So from the pictures, it looks like it's kind of a metal building.
Right, something that's going to be good at holding in temperature, moisture, you know, maintaining that problem. I would have never expected, like, what would start a fire besides a person trying to on purpose? You know what I mean?
Oh my gosh. Derek, I gotta send you this picture. It's
maybe
phenomenal.
We can make the episode picture, you know?
Yeah. Make it the, absolutely.
Give whoever took it credit, of course.
Absolutely. So I'm getting this from, I'll send you the link to the article as well.
Spicy.
But like, take a look at this, at these pictures, and it's crazy. Like,
whoa,
yeah,
that looks like the wildfires we have today. I don't know. We'll decide which one to use. I was thinking the one you were describing of the firefighter wading through it. You know,
yeah, that's a good one too. I'll send you that. That's a different article.
That's wild.
All right, I gotta find it again. Here we go. It's pretty crazy.
It's
right?
Apocalyptic and looking. Holy cow.
It is. I mean, like, it's like so orange and like the black smoke. And
if you take
like,
that next to like
the
building BP
collapsing
oil spill?
Into itself. Yeah. I mean, and like, I love this one with like there's like a picture. It's like these bricks of cheese that are just like melting down. And this is like this neon orange color, and it's just like
it looks so creepy. And you know, Jim just for reference sent me a picture of the fire, and the only thing I can notice in the foreground is a gas station, and gas is 119, and that just makes me viscerally mad.
I feel like it's not too bad right now. Like down here, it's like 275, 285 a gallon.
Must be nice.
But yeah, so I mean, it really is this crazy apocalyptic image, and like the butter, the cheese, it almost looks like nuclear waste.
Yeah,
like, it's just this crazy orange.
It's like it looks like something out of sci-fi, like Halloween themed, gooey, creepy amalgamation of evil.
And then I love this picture with the CSW and the polar bear in front of the fire. And it's just this
chef's kiss.
Whoever was, yeah, that's a good picture right there. But yeah, so just a wild, wild event. Fortunately, no one was injured seriously. No one was killed, and a lot of queso dumped down the drain.
Gosh, pour one out for all the lost cheese. But you know, I guess my last notes, right? Shout out to the firefighters here. They're always the heroes of the story. So often don't get enough credit. Shout out to the scientist who made sure that the environment, like all the ecologists and like, I hate to even say it, geologists too, that probably had to do their due diligence. You know, it's good stuff. Like the whole community coming together, like to prevent what could have been a general catastrophe to all the surrounding cities. Like, luckily, Wisconsin, to my knowledge, is pretty spread out, you know, all things considered, like city to city.
Well, I feel like I think I've heard like Madison, Wisconsin.
Right, it's a pretty big city. I've only been to like Wisconsin in the context of like the national parks up yonder, right?
Yeah. So Madison, Wisconsin is basically, it's kind of in the middle of the state, but it is one of the bigger cities, and it's just west of Milwaukee, but it's a fairly large town.
Can you think about like what happens if they had a failure in the water system, or like the groundwater was tainted somehow, or forbid all of those underground pipes, you know, they start taking in butter and then they get clogged on a mass level. Can you imagine?
Yeah. And like that was a concern, right? Cause like they're pumping this stuff into the sewer, and the concern is that the butter is basically going to congeal.
Yeah.
In the sewer, and it's going to cause this massive backup in the sewers.
It's like pouring bacon grease down your drain. You're saving a little bit of time now. You're going to pay for it next summer.
Oh my gosh. And so like one of the big things that happened was like they had to monitor like the pumping and the like kind of the downstream like sewage treatment plants and stations to make sure that they didn't have too much, basically too much butter going into the system that they could still deal with it.
Yeah.
Which is just crazy. Like to think about.
Like more weird fluids, man.
Yeah, it's just good weird fluids. So, but yeah, so that's the Wisconsin butter fire.
Gosh. I think this is the first one we've covered where there actually weren't any casualties. That's a W.
That's true. Yes. Yep, that's true. The Dublin whiskey fire still had casualties. Although in a way we wouldn't expect. So yeah, this is the first really event where we don't have any casualties at all. And I think it really speaks to like, you know, we haven't talked about a lot of the industrial disasters that have kind of led to us, but it really speaks like all the employees who were in the building were able to get out.
Yeah. Even though the
fire spread so quickly, the fire suppression system was ineffective, right? Like that alone
could have been a totally different situation.
Could have been a very, very different situation, and really speaks to kind of like that safety mindset has come in the past, you know, 100 years since we talked about, you know, like the Great Molasses Flood.
Yeah, for context, like this is fairly recent history too. So we're talking, you know, modern firefighting equipment, you know, like semi-modern fire engines and such.
And so next week's episode is going to be, I think, our finale of this kind of weird fluid floods. And I think I'm going to keep it a secret until next week.
Sweet.
What exactly it is, but we're going to be jumping into pretty much, the modern day. So we're going to be very, very recent. And it should be good. So,
hey, that's an episode. Jim, you got anything to plug before we head out?
I don't know. I think, you know, I don't think I can plug the Whiskey Grail as easily because we don't drink butter out of our Whiskey Grails. So,
yet.
I don't recommend that. I don't think it's a good idea.
Yeah, I don't think that's going to, it's not really whiskey. I don't have anything to plug, but of course, gentle listener, if you would like to, you know, follow us, give us some feedback, we have a couple ways to do it now. If you're listening to this on Spotify, you can go ahead and answer the Q&A. There should be a question about, like, did you like the episode? You have an idea for future episodes, hit us up there. Of course, hit us up on Twitter at All Our Spring. Twitter, not X. All Our Spring. And I guess we'll see you next week.
Hey, Derek.
Yeah.
Let's bounce.
Let's bounce.